All right, it's another Wednesday night, and you are in the zone here on News Talk 96.1 and AM 1370 WGCL. Dave and Glass with you again on another Wednesday night, and we are, as always, taking your phone calls at 333-2665. Lots going on in the world of sports right now as we've got the Big Ten tournament underway. The Hoosiers play tomorrow night to start off, but Penn State up in the second half right now on Nebraska as the first of the two games tonight in the bottom four seeds in the Big Ten tournament. A lot going on. NFL free agency started yesterday officially, and the Colts have been all over the place right now, getting all kinds of veteran players. Frank Gore, Andre Johnson, Trent Cole, Harriman's the tackle, Mike Adams re-signed the safety, and all kinds of stuff that the Colts are getting done at this stage. And of course, we are also heading into Indiana's battle tomorrow night to try to get into the NCAA tournament, and we'll have to do so through the Big Ten tournament game tomorrow night against Northwestern. But you look awfully excited.
So unbelievable. The European Champions League round of 16 action from Stamford Bridge. If you had to leave your house or whatever it was like we did, extra time in the Stamford Bridge. 10-men PSG have just equalized. Dave, I can't see the clock. Courtois made an unbelievable save for Chelsea before that led to another corner. And a header here from about 12 yards out in the bottom corner from captain Thiago Silva has won it for PSG. Chelsea must score.
This is about 1:13 on the clock.
1:13, so go to 1:20. So they got about six more minutes, but a fantastic header. It's the second one off a set piece today.
Just inside.
And Courtois, all 6-7 of them could not get to it. So the Parisians are now level on the day at 2 goals apiece. They are level on aggregate, 3 goals apiece, but the 2 goals today, Dave, in London on the road. It's 2 goals all. It's maddening. And Paris Saint-Germain has been playing with 10 men for, let's see, 23 minutes and 113, about a whole game.
Yeah.
With a man down on the road against Jose Mourinho on his home field. Ooh. Unbelievable. Great action. Let's get you a baseball update as well. A little bit different weather conditions today at Bart Kauffman.
A little nice.
65 and absolutely perfect. I don't even know how warm. Is it warmer than that?
I don't know.
8-1, it's nice. Bottom of 8. As the Hoosiers look to sweep a 2-game series from Eastern Michigan, as they, Indiana will have tomorrow off. Then they welcome Cal State Fullerton to Bart Kauffman Field Friday, Saturday, and Sunday. Cal State Fullerton just swept number 5 Texas Tech in Lubbock last weekend. So a big weekend for Indiana on the baseball diamond as well. If there's any other score in that Chelsea game, the other round of 16 to get. Today, Bayern Munich 7, Shakhtar Donetsk 0.
That's not shocking.
Not at all.
Literally Shakhtar.
7 is plenty.
So there you go. I told you there'd be a lot going on in the world of sports. Let's go ahead and knock out here in the last part of this segment, however. The Colts have been very active. We'll cover the Hoosiers here in just a little while, but the Colts have been very active and active with big names at this point in time. A little over $40 million in money for Ryan Grigson and Jim Irsay and the group to spend, and they have come out swinging as they've added some big names and some maybe second-tier names, but certainly have not been taking it easy. Let's start on the offensive side of the ball, and in particular, skill positions. One spot where, let's be fair, the Colts have had quite a bit of skilled players the last couple of years for Andrew Luck, but they went with a couple veterans here in signing Andre Johnson, of course, of the Houston Texans. He's 33 years old, but always been very productive, a little banged up the last couple of years. But they also signed a 31 or 32-year-old Frank Gore at running back, and running back's been a revolving door the last couple of years also. Glass, I love both these players. I've watched these players intently and love watching them play the last couple of years. My only issue right now is they're both 32 or 33 years old.
They are, but the one thing we have to remember, the Colts have not signed them to 10-year contracts and are mortgaging the future. This is a let's get winning and let's get winning now, because Gore, I think, is 4 years, $12 million, six of it's up front. So, again, that's not going to kill you in the long run. It's essentially what you paid Akeem Nicks last year for 1 year. Now, I know the age is a little bit different.
A little more guaranteed.
But what
money,
you like but... about Gore is he's put up 1,000 yards, 8 of the 9 last 9 years. He's a complete pros pro. He's a really solid locker room guy. Those are things that without Reggie Wayne, you have to kind of look at replacing as well. Gore's been pretty durable. If you've put up 1,000 yards in the NFL 8 of 9 years, Yeah. I agree with you. Running backs,
that's a lot of carries, though. That's
they're
the
not
thing.
Evergreen. But I think, again, as the Colts have shown over the last couple of years, it's not a featured one-back system, maybe like San Francisco was. This is going to be Gore two-thirds of the carries, and then I think somebody else is going to get another third.
Somebody's going to have to.
Well, I don't
you
think
need a third down back, because Gore is not a particularly fast player.
No, but he's a great pass receiver, too. He catches a ton of balls out of the backfield, which helps. No,
smart player, and as you mentioned, he's certainly not going to ruffle any feathers.
No, he's not at all, and if anything, he's going to help. And the other part of that you like, he's just a veteran guy that he's a better Ahmad Bradshaw, if you're looking at it in that sense. He's a little bit older. I got that. Yeah. He's played on really good teams the last 3 years.
Well,
he's gotten
fair.
A sniff of it.
Ahmad's had some issues, off the field. For, since he was in college.
That you're not going to have to worry about with Gore, which is the good news. And the other part of the Gore situation you like, he's not a known fumbler. He's not a guy he's just a real – everybody who plays fantasy football knows in the running back world, he's a guy that's going to get you four or five pass receptions a game. 15 to 20 carries is all you're asking. You're not putting him as a one-back feature.
Right.
And, again, for the money, I think it's a $5 or $6 million up front.
It's not a ton of money. And that's important because there's some other names that were kicked around. We kicked around Adrian Peterson.
Sure. DeMarco,
and certainly DeMarco Murray's out there.
Yep.
Those are much bigger names money, I should say, potentially at this point in time. And, again, running back more and more in the NFL shows, if you get 6 to 8 years out of a guy and they're really productive, you're really lucky. So, to me, I mean, you can't go with Frank Gore and look at a ton of money in that case. They're not, I'll take a wait and see here. I don't think he's more than a two-year guy.
No.
And maybe contract-wise, that's exactly what they intended to be.
Who cares?
And that's fine.
They're trying to shoot the moon now.
I love the way he plays. I mean, you've always liked Frank Gore. You can't not like him. The only question is, does he have too much mileage? On the other side of that, the Colts determined that Reggie Wayne had too much mileage and wanted to move on from Reggie. Sad to see Reggie go. He was one of the ultimate Colts, one of the ultimate professionals. Certainly looking at who they're signing after they let Reggie go, you got to look at some locker room guys, because Reggie was such a good locker room guy with that team. It is sad to see him go, but let's be fair, he's on the decline. There's no question about that. But going out and signing Andre Johnson to fill in that spot, again, is there too much mileage? We'll find out. But you certainly went at a guy that's going to be cost-effective and has a ton of production behind him. So this isn't Darius Haywood Bay and Hakeem Nicks in another one-year Band-Aid to see if they can make it work.
No, I think it's 3 years, $21 million, and I'm not sure how that one is structured. But the key to Johnson is he's not going to be the featured target in the sense where teams are going to have to game plan around him. That's T.Y. Hilton. T.Y. has earned that position. T.Y. has earned that notoriety.
Johnson's not a burner.
And he's not, but you know what he is? He's 6'3", 220, and he's got big hands, and he catches everything. So he's going to be more of a physical presence. He's going to be a guy that can play wide. He can play in the slot. He's not afraid to go across the middle, not at all. And how many times have the Colts you've seen in the division, you're going to play the Texans. Here goes Andre Johnson for 10 and 220.
Exactly.
So that's with the wide receiver position, it's a little bit easier, because got to remember, every time when we sit here on Monday, unless the Colts play on Monday night, of course, we talk about when Luck's numbers are done, and Luck's 27 to 38 for 360 yards, and nine guys have caught balls.
Right.
So you're not going to run Andre Johnson to death.
No, he's not going to catch 14 balls.
In those early years with Schaub, it was like, it's you two.
Yeah,
you guys go and figure it out.
I'll just throw
That's not going to be the case now. And with Andre Johnson not having that spotlight shining bright on him, he could be a huge 75 to 85 catch guy, and he's a great red zone receiver. He's a great guy going across the middle. Yep. And he just doesn't drop any passes, and the Colts drop passes.
And let's remember, we certainly have draft picks coming up here too, so we'll see what they add in.
Line.
Well, that's
line.
Where I was going next. We hope they certainly add on to the offensive line. They re-signed Joe Wrights. That tells
great
you they
move.
Need depth. And let's be fair, the guys that did play in there, he played quite a bit down the stretch here because of injuries. So you've got a guy that's used to the system.
And he can play
stick
multiple
around,
positions.
Can play multiple
you.
Positions. He played tackle last year, late in the year. He plays guard most of the time. I believe he can play center also. The interesting one is taking another guy, again, another guy a little banged up, but a veteran player, Todd Harriman's played a long time with Philadelphia, started a lot of games with Philadelphia. Big, big body. He's a guard. You want to get physical, and you certainly need to get physical when you're going to bring in a guy like Frank Gore. You got to get physical up front in the middle of that thing, in the middle of that offensive line. Todd Harriman is a guy that can do that.
And check the box, Philadelphia, Gregson familiar with the guy, familiar
absolutely.
With the way he is in the locker room, familiar with the way he plays, obviously has plenty of tape on him and has seen him. And that's the offensive side of things to get started. Matt Hasselbeck has been re-signed a one-year deal, so everybody can be quiet about who Andrew Luck's backup's
guy.
He's never going to play.
Doesn't matter.
But
he's perfect
but
for
you're
it.
Talking about good locker room guys. That's another
that's
guy
right.
to have who's going to help.
And great for Andrew Luck.
And
I mean,
who's
going to
take
like that
little bit of that Reggie Wayne. I'm not saying he's going to be Reggie Wayne. No one's going to fill those boots. But having a guy like Hasselbeck who's been around it, and him and Luck have been together since day one, that's a good combination. Don't break that one up.
No, on the defensive side, they re-signed Darius Butler, so that gives you your third corner. I'll tell you what, for a small guy, he's all over people, and I like the way he plays. Cam Johnson, he's re-signed. He's kind of depth and a special teams player.
Year, so he was an injured reserve.
Mike Adams, a little bit more key re-signing. Yeah. Again, here's another old guy, though, and I stress this. I like veterans. I'm wary about having too many veterans, especially at certain spots, simply because age is not a fan of the NFL. It's not a friend.
Father Time
to teams.
Lie.
It's just not. So, he had a nice season last year. I'm all for bringing him back and seeing what we can do. Again, this is another spot maybe you look at in the draft is safety for down the line. The one position, two positions here where they signed some larger names. Again, another player who's been around a long time, but as a specialist in particular, and a very good one at that, is outside linebacker Trent Cole, also with the Philadelphia Eagles for a long time. This is a guy that does one thing really, really well.
He can
play all three, four downs or whatever, but he's really good at going hog wild after the quarterback. And if you watched the Colts last year, you know they had nobody get after the quarterback.
They did, and part of that was Robert Mathis being hurt.
And now you get Robert Mathis back. Hopefully, the only issue there is, of course, you're looking at a pair of 32- or 33-year-old pass rushers, but you also get two of the better ones in the NFL for the last decade.
Here's
or so.
The key. The Colts are bringing in players to win now and next year-ish. That's not a 6-7-year whatever those contracts say, don't worry about it. Remember, nothing in the NFL is guaranteed except signing bonuses.
Right.
That's it. So it's win now. It's load up everything before they're going to have to pay a lot of money to pay Andrew Luck. And it's veteran. It's not a third or fourth year. It's not these fourth or fifth year guys.
Right.
These are guys that have been playoff football with the Eagles, Harrimans, and the linebacker we just talked about.
Cole.
Frank Gore has been on three of the best San Francisco teams since Joe Montana and Steve Young have been around. Those teams just knocked on the door, and it seems like in the NFC Championship game three of the last 4 years. So they bring in guys that aren't new to winning who are going to be shell-shocked or surprised at the culture or what it's going to take.
Right.
Hopefully it's a group of guys that say, hey, we've been in this spot, maybe not Andre Johnson, but hey, we've played in some championship games. Here's what we can bring to the table.
Well,
that's a little bit different.
Texans a year or two ago were division winners, so they don't have a lot of success, but they got a little. The last signing is a younger player. This is a defensive end. He's 6'6", 313. Kendall Langford, and if you watched again the defensive line, not just the pass rush, but the whole defensive line
and
was
Jonathan
a little
Newsom's
disappointing
be back.
The
was,
last couple
Jonathan,
years. Jonathan Newsom was a nice player as a specialist. There's no question.
We'll put him in that thing.
He
but
surprised
Bjorn
some
wasn't.
People. Well, I think Bjorn Warner. I think the problem with Bjorn Warner is everybody has made him into the pass rush replacement for Dwight Freeney.
What's his position?
He is more to me. He was always cast incorrectly. He is a 4-3 defensive end. That's
in
what
a
3-4
system.
That's what he played in college. He wants his hand down on the ground. He wants to go after guys. So they put him in that spot when they're in passing downs and they rush four down guys. That's what they do. Now, he's a better kind of run point of attack guy if you let him play that, but they ask him so much to go after the quarterback that he's flying upfield as fast as he can. He's just not as fast as some of these other guys. But several moves for the Colts on the first couple days, no question. They're getting after it, signing a couple of their important guys, and eventually got to leave some money around for T.Y. Hilton and Andrew Luck and some of those guys to
Dwayne
get
Dwayne Allen, Kobe Fleener.
Kobe Fleener. There's a few of them.
Keep going down the line of the skill players that all came in together. But reinforcements like it.
They didn't spend all their money just yet, so we'll see what else they have to do. We'll turn it over to basketball when we get back from the break. 333-2665 is the phone number. Dave and Glass with you in the zone. All right, you're back in the zone with Dave and Glass on News Talk 96.1 and AM 1370 WGCL. Quick programming note, we've got high school basketball returning this Saturday as the regional championship down in Seymour is being held and Bloomington South is in it. They are kicking the whole things off early in the morning. 9:30 is Chalk Talk here
breakfast
on WGCL.
Talk.
That's right. 10 o'clock tip-off for Bloomington South against Franklin Central. And then the nightcap, if the Panthers win, would be against the winner of New Albany and Evansville Wrights, which in its own right would be a heck of a game in the second game of that early session to the regional. But that would be 7:30 chalked off and 8 o'clock tip-off for the championship game. And so that could be a real doozy.
Loaded field at the Barney Scott Gym down there in Seymour.
You got number 2 Wrights, you got number 5 New Albany, and number 6 South all in there. So you could be facing a 2 versus 6 or a 5 versus 6 in the nightcap for the regional championship. So you'll want to check all that out here on Saturday on WGCL. And we should note while we're there, since we're getting close now, we are picking up all of the NCAA tournament. Still to be determined about the first 4 games, but we're covering every other single game that's out there starting noon on Thursday here on WGCL. So all kinds
and
of NCAA
basketball. And don't
forget,
Sunday night, 6 o'clock, we'll have the selection show, 3 hours, right, where the brackets are announced, analysis, everything from Westwood One that's provided. So hopefully the Indiana Hoosiers' name will be announced. They have a lot to say whether that's going to happen or not starting tomorrow night, but we'll have that coverage for you. 6 to 9 to kick off the NCAA tournaments, all 68 teams. We'll trot them on out there and show you what's going on. Again, Sunday at 6 p.m. right here on WGCL.
And just another note real quickly, the Big Ten tournament has started. Penn State and Nebraska are playing right now. Penn State is holding on to a 2-point lead with about 4 minutes left to go in the game. And the winner goes on to face Iowa. The nightcap tonight is Rutgers and Minnesota, with the winner going on to play Ohio State. But the Hoosiers, Northwestern, of course, they played up in Evanston just about 2 weeks ago and lost 72-65. And the most notable thing about that is it was all offense in the first half, tied up 40 all at half. And it was, I don't know if defense or bad offense or what exactly it was,
D, but all the above.
Not a lot of scoring in the second half, especially early on. The Hoosiers, 8 points in 16 minutes. How do they avoid that particular drought? Because they got up and down the court, both teams did, and maybe the Hoosiers shouldn't let Northwestern get up and down the court with them for a while. But the biggest thing to me comes down to an offensive team can't score for 16 minutes, you got a problem.
Yep, you sure do, and that's going to be the lock and key to tomorrow's game. We've talked about Indiana maybe mixing in some press to shake up tempo when things don't go that well. Tom Crean mentioned that on his radio program last night. Maybe Indiana goes to that a little earlier than they have before. But if they make their shots, Dave, and they move the basketball and they get to the lane, they get to the foul line, things they haven't been doing a ton of lately, Indiana has every chance to beat 15-16 Northwestern. This is not the 2-7 game and Northwestern's the 2.
No.
This is the 7-10 game where Indiana is the 7 and Northwestern's the 10. And the Hoosiers have to find a way, because they've leaked oil the last, 12 games, 4-8 in their last 12. Half of those wins are against Rutgers. None of those wins have been anybody that's been, ranked higher than them in league play.
No, Michigan and Minnesota.
It's been a very uncomfortable couple of weeks because you've had different scenarios of stuff, and none of it has gone in their favor. Indiana has not found a way to get the ball to the rim and score on a consistent basis. The three-pointers you saw against Minnesota, you hit a Big Ten record, 18 of them, and then did you hit 18 in 3 games after that? I don't know, but that's the point. Indiana has to find a way to score, and does that mean, is it getting the ball to the basket? Does it mean being patient? Yes, yes, and yes. Just keep checking all the boxes, because whatever's been done to this point hasn't worked out. They're not scoring enough points. They're not putting any pressure on any of these teams that they've been playing, because they've been trailing. And when Indiana's offense trails, other teams can work the clock. They can work Indiana's defense, which is still ranked last in the Big Ten the last time we checked.
Yep.
And you saw it with Northwestern the last time they played. Hey, here you go, up 4, up 6, up 8. Hey, let's move the ball. Let's move it 2 more passes. Let's make them guard for 10 more seconds and wait for the breakdown. When Indiana leads, teams can't be that particular. So, yeah, it is offensive-based, Dave. Yeah, the defense has to get better. But I don't think in the last 4 days there can be this paradigm shift 180 degrees and say, okay, now we start guarding everybody. That's not going to be the case. You hope everybody's healthy. You hope everybody's drinking plenty of fluids and getting massaged and getting stretched out and ready to go. But you can't have guys no-show it anytime in this tournament. From here on out, you can't have a night off in hope unless you do light it up for however many three-pointers you have to. You need Troy. You need Yogi. When this team is balanced, it knocks down shots. It gets to the foul line. They're very hard to guard. When they're off balance, it seems the offense gets narrow. And what I mean by that is the options shrink, the patience shrinks, and the shot selection shrinks. And when that all happens, bad things happen to Indiana if those shots aren't falling. They need to be hard to guard. They need to be properly spaced, and they need easy baskets. That's another key. Can you get past guys and get to the rim?
And we will see on the other side. We'll talk a little bit more about both offense and defense for the Hoosiers.
Yeah, because there's plenty to do.
When we get back from the break, 333-2665 is our phone number. Back in just a couple minutes. Dave and Glass with you in the Zone. All right, you're back in the Zone with Dave and Glass on News Talk 96.1 and AM 1370 WGCL. Quick programming notes again. We got high school basketball this Saturday starting 9:30 for Chalk Talk for Bloomington South and Franklin Central in the opener of the Seymour Regional. Tip-off is 10 o'clock, and if the Panthers win, and we certainly hope they do, they will be playing in the championship game at night against either New Albany or Evansville Wrights, and that'll start at 8 o'clock for the tip-off there with Chalk Talk starting at 7:30.
That's 19 straight for the Panthers, and Franklin Central had to win a couple straight to get to 8-15 to get in there. Conference Indiana foes, Dave, so no secrets being hidden there, but the Panthers
playing well.
Again, can't look ahead to game number two because that's a big-time matchup.
That sometimes happens in the tournament, so you want to keep an eye on that. Certainly Franklin Central's playing with the house money, so bring the intensity early. And then see what happens in the evening against either the second or fifth-ranked teams in the evening game. Also, programming notes, Sunday night starting 6 o'clock, we will have Westwood One's broadcast of the selection show for the NCAA tournament. Find out if the Hoosiers are in or out. Find out who else is in or out. And listen to guys talk for 3 hours about who didn't make it and what matchups look good. Always a fun time. Some of the favorite TV during the course of the NCAA season, basketball season, is watching and listening and looking at the brackets for the first time and hearing about them. So that'll be here on WGCL 6 o'clock on Sunday. Speaking of brackets, we start with the Big Ten tournament first, and the Hoosiers tomorrow night, 6:30 tip-off against Northwestern in the 7-10 game. Let's start on the defensive side of the ball. Not the Hoosiers calling card by any stretch of the imagination, but you mentioned the idea of do you throw some press in there. They're certainly not going to go all out, you know, 40 minutes of hell kind of Nolan Richardson stuff. But I look at this and I see you do have a couple veteran guards in Demps, and now Jershon Cobb is coming back, but you also got a couple freshmen, Scotty Lindsey and Bryant McIntosh. And McIntosh is a guy that handles the ball a lot.
He can play.
If you throw a little bit of that at him, maybe you turn him over a couple times. I don't know, but I think you're right with it. You got to change. I don't know if you try something different or not, but you've got to do something.
Right.
You've got to put something back in their mind to get the intensity back
up. And when you talk about pressing or trapping or whatever it is, it doesn't have to be for 40 minutes. It doesn't have to be for four possessions in a row. It could be for two possessions in a row. Something to get Northwestern uncomfortable. Something that you haven't shown on film. Something you didn't show in the last matchup. So maybe you what most teams do, Dave, is anytime there's a made free throw, that's a logical time to do it because you have time to gather at the foul line and say, hey, you know, if this one goes in, we're going to jump you in press. Sometimes you take the ball out of bounds going the other way after a turnover. That's another time to do it. But Indiana usually does things a little bit more differently. So it wouldn't surprise me if you'd see them drop back into a 2-3 zone and then the first pass goes laterally. Boom, they jump out and get it. That's what I'm talking about being completely different, because the playbook that's gotten Indiana this far defensively hasn't really shown any fruits of good spacing,
you don't have to
good
be nice.
Man.
It's been awful.
The
numbers are awful.
And they have tried things. They've tried half man, half zone.
Yeah.
They've tried this in the same possession. They've tried that. So one more thing would be, this would be an extension of pressure. When you play man into zone, zone into man, you're giving a look that confuses, not putting physical pressure, getting into somebody, trapping. That's going to be what's different, which I think could give some freshman ball handlers some problems.
333-2665 is our phone number. Let me ask you the loaded question
And
that is, at this stage, and given what you've seen out of the defense all year long, and again, I know everybody wants to kill the coaches for what they're trying on defense. I think they're trying it because they, quite frankly, don't see a very good defensive team, and they're trying whatever they can. That said, would you rather, at this moment, they simplify things to make it easier on the brains a little bit so they know their assignments, because we've seen them miss a lot of assignments, or would you rather throw more wrinkles at them and make them think a little bit more?
And
it's a little loaded in the way I ask that, but it seems to me like they're potentially adding more to think about.
They are, but they can also subtract more to get there. that makes sense. All right. If you're going to, maybe you trade one for the other instead of adding it to the repertoire.
Or trade four for one.
Well, there you go. Or you trade, hey, you know, we're not going to change in the middle of possessions anymore in this sense.
Right.
We're going to do this, and whoever's on this side of the court runs and traps, everybody else helps. I have no idea. I'm not in practice. They're not going to tell you any of this stuff. But what I do know, Dave, it hasn't been very good for the last 3 weeks, and something has to be different because Northwestern already showed them one time after 40-40 at halftime. Well, they got 40 on them in the first half. Let's not just omit that.
Right.
That's not a very high-scoring Northwestern team that did that.
Nope.
And then in the second half, they picked and choose their spots. You let Northwestern pick and choose their spots. This wasn't a game where Northwestern expanded their lead by getting to the foul line and making fouls. They were making jump shots and scoring baskets and getting wide open layups. Indiana's got a plethora of problems. And I think the problem that's the easiest one they can solve is fix the offense, because you've seen James Blackmon Jr. get much better in the last 3 weeks of taking the ball to the basket, not settling for jump shots. He still shoots some bad ones because that's what freshmen do.
Yeah.
Robert Johnson catches the ball maybe on one more pass rotation. Those are other things you can help as well. So I don't think Indiana comes out tomorrow and plays some kind of wonderful defensive scheme no one has seen before and all of a sudden lock down everybody.
Right, no,
now, they might for 5 or 10 minutes at a time, but usually water finds its level as the game moves itself on. But I think you need everything. When you talk about that report card, when you talk about what Indiana has to do to be successful, we've seen Troy Williams lead the team in scoring.
Mm-hmm.
We've seen Yogi lead the team in scoring. You've seen Blackmon lead the team in scoring. Johnson lead the team in scoring. You've seen four guys scoring double figures at Northwestern and not win because other parts don't fall into place. The effort that it's going to take to beat Northwestern, who's already obviously beaten Indiana, and then beat Maryland, and then get you into a Big Ten semifinal, and then play in a final, all that stuff has to come together if Indiana wants to keep playing in the NCAA tournament. You can't lose to 15-16.
No.
You can't do it
right now.
If
you lose, you're out.
I think that's the pressure.
I don't think there's a lot of question about
that. And that's the other interesting part of it, and back to your comment coming full circle here, what kind of pressure do you want to put on these kids? And I think the pressure you put on them is offensively because that comes easiest to them.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think you want to spend the time distracting from, if we do this really well and move the ball, get through the lane, get to the lane, beat guys off the dribble, we're hard to beat.
Right.
Instead of saying, now we're going to twist and shake. Instead of jumping screens here, we're going to hedge down here and dip here.
Well,
and
that's why
that's
I suggest,
good,
especially on the defensive end, I mean, simplification seems like it's got to occur at some point in time, because there's little doubt, and I don't know that Coach Crean has said this isn't the case or not, but there's little doubt that they are missing people. They're losing people when they go through
and
their switches.
Crazy.
I understand why they're doing it. I don't disagree with that. You've got, what, the sixth or seventh youngest team in America, and it's showing that it's not working for them. So maybe right now isn't the best time to continue to hammer that strategy into their heads. Wait till next year or the offseason, see if they can figure it out. Right now, to me, you got to simplify things.
The simplification for that is, and you hear me moan about this all the time, it seems like this season the best players on the other team have scored all the points.
Mm-hmm.
Aaron White kills you.
Right.
You go to Maryland.
Last year it was somebody you never heard of.
And that's the other issue that goes on. You play Michigan State without Dawson, and then how many does Trice and Valentine get? All of them, except the kids off the bench helped out as well. But is simplifying it taking away demps? Is it making Ola beat you? What do you give to get something? Because I don't think, and this goes back to what you're talking about, I don't think collectively it's going to get better. So simplifying it, saying, hey, you're guarding Johnson, you're guarding Trey Demps.
Yeah.
We're switching every guard.
It's
guard to guard on Demps and everybody else.
It's easy to say that let's go man as a fan and think that's the way you can actually play defense, because there's so many different looks that get thrown at you. You have to know how to handle just a simple pick and roll.
Right.
You have to know what to do. Are you flashing? Are you not? Are you following your guy through over the top? Are you going? So there's a lot
the
you can do there.
Two guys that have killed him.
But to me, it still has to be about. I think the way I would look at it is, let's work on not giving up the easy baskets, because we've given up too many easy baskets either from a lack of effort or from a confusion of our own point and losing guys. And to me, that has to be the first choice, because what this team can't afford to do on the defensive end is give up easy points. It's given up points that teams work for a little bit because it's not a great defensive team anyways.
Right.
So don't give them any more easy ones, and you know you can score some points at some point.
And the counterbalance to that is what Northwestern learned in the first game. They run their offense, and they wait for Indiana to get disinterested playing in the last 10 seconds of the shot clock. Northwestern wasn't breaking out 3-on-2, pulling up and hitting threes.
No.
They were moving the ball. Ola would get the ball in the middle. He'd turn. He'd look for some options. He'd wait. Somebody would back cut. Somebody would move. Somebody beat somebody off the dribble because they're waiting for the screen. Collectively, it has to be better. Perea being in the middle has to be a force. Williams has to rebound better. The guards have to get in somebody's shirt on the three-point line. You just have to check all those little boxes because little things eventually turn into big things, and you saw that, and we've seen that against some of these teams late in the season where it hasn't gone Indiana's way, and then they tell us after the game, well, we should have done that and could have done that. Now you got to put it together.
Yeah.
Now it's time to go. It's a neutral court. It's not the half Indiana half. It'll be more Indiana than it's going to be Northwestern at the United Center. Everybody knows that. You're going to have a rowdy, at least Indiana crowd. It's a Thursday night at 5:30. That's happy hour. That's going to be the case. But that didn't factor against Iowa at home. That didn't factor on your home court against Michigan State at home minus Dawson.
Right.
So it's going to be a do-it-yourself job in this one. And we talk about Indiana living and dying by the three. I don't think so, but I just can't find many games where Indiana's hit 13 or 14 three-pointers within the normal course of the game and had a problem. They hit 7 or 8 against Wisconsin to give them 13 or 14 when they're down 30.
Again,
that's a whole another story. But
the threes are a product of their good offense.
It is.
When they play
and
good
it's
offense.
Moving the ball. And
I can think of maybe one or two games where it was just a reliance on hitting threes from outside, and not necessarily even working all that hard for them.
Yeah.
But most of the time, you look back at a couple of better games they played, Maryland twice, the Minnesota game here. A lot of threes in those games, but a lot of that had to do with the ball movement. I mean, it did.
Now,
finding people open.
Fix this problem, and you will be making $3.7 million a year as well.
Oh, sweet.
The issue is the chicken and the egg.
The egg.
Right. So when those threes go in, things are well. How do you get to those open threes?
Sure.
It's doing everything.
But, well, how do you move the ball?
Well, I mean, you have to move the ball, and you have to be difficult to guard.
Yeah, what did teams like Iowa and Michigan State here take them out of? Or in this case, let's stick with what we have to deal with tomorrow night. What did Northwestern do in the second half that caused us so many problems? Tom Crean came out afterwards and answered it at the wrong time. But when he was asked about the defense, he said they missed shots. Well, that's not the answer to the what's wrong with your defense question, but it is an answer to the second half of that game because they did have open shots in that game. Here's another way maybe you simplify things, and you tell me if this is nuts. Are they trying... I won't say trying too hard because they're not doing this necessarily. Are they relying too much or waiting around too much on perfect shots and not taking some shots quickly enough or not being aggressive enough with some of their shots?
Are they playing basketball or are they thinking? I always ask you this when we talk off the air.
Are they
robots? Are they thinking, well, he told us to make the extra pass. Now do I not catch it and shoot it? Well, that's what young
teams do. I watched in the last two or three games at home, Trey Demps hit shots with guys all over him, just draped on him. And you're like, "Don't! What are you doing? That's oh, my God, it went in." And Utoff is – and these guys, to their credit, I think, still, these guys, they're looking for the next best pass to go to the open, wide-open guy. And when that has worked well, they've blown people's doors off because they can shoot it that well. But the question still comes down to me is, do they need to be more aggressive with their shots and not work? And I'm not saying don't work for a good shot, but if you get it and you've got that second to best shot and you've got James Blackman taking it, do you want that? I think so.
If that's what they're thinking about, they're going to struggle. They need to go back to playing. They need to see what's happening in front of them and go. And I don't want to say it's overcoaching because, like we mentioned, we're not at practice. We can just see what's happening on the floor. And when it doesn't look well, it doesn't look confident. The pass maybe isn't made. And the other thing that happens, the offense, dribble. I get it. That's part of the deal. It ain't changing. Dribble, dribble, dribble. Last 10 seconds, you can't make three passes and get a good shot. Mm. Doesn't work that way because usually those passes are one handoff, two handoff, and then one look or it's going up.
Jump into the lane and toss it out.
On the break, you know they're going to shoot threes. That's part of their philosophy. You know in the offense, you would hope they take the best look they get instead of waiting and hopefully getting that look later. I don't know, Dave. Right now, it's very easy to describe when it works and very difficult to solve when it isn't. You know my philosophy. I'd find ways to get Williams isolated. I'd find ways to get to the basket. I like making two-pointers from 2 feet, then three-pointers from 23 feet.
When they're able to get into the lane and
sometimes a dribble drive takes that away. when you start settling for jump shots.
We've got to take a quick break. We've got our first result of the Big Ten tournament. We'll tell you about that when we get back. 333-2665 is the phone number. Dave and Glass with you in the zone. All right, you're back in the zone with Dave and Glass on News Talk 96.1 and AM 1370 WGCL. Quick programming notes again for you. We've got high school basketball this Saturday. 9:30 Chalk Talk and 10 a.m. is the tip-off for South and Franklin Central. And if South wins, they'll play in the championship game in the nightcap. 7:30 Chalk Talk and 8 o'clock for that, with South in that case facing the winner of Evansville Wrights and New Albany. And also we'll have the selection show for you here on the radio, 6 o'clock on Sunday night. Find out who's in and who's out and who's upset about all of that here on WGCL. 333-2665 is a phone number. Let's bring in our friend John. John, we got your running back.
Hey, yeah, you got a good one, too. I think he's got a couple of years in the tank. So
that's all we want.
We hope so, because running backs go quick.
Yeah, they do.
That slide is very fast.
Steven Jackson.
He is very, very good. Okay, this is not a rhetorical question, guys. I'm curious to hear what you both have to say. Given, let's say, the last 10 games, a sample of the last 10 games that Indiana's played, what gives you any optimism that this team can go out and actually beat Northwestern?
You know, that's a very fair question. And we reach back for what was really good, and that was the ability to shred Rutgers, who's a bad team, the ability to knock down threes against Minnesota. If there's one thing you want to have in this situation, which I agree is not optimum in any means, is you have a team who believes in they can score the basketball and shoot threes. And if you hit four or five threes in a row, it doesn't matter what game it is, if it's four or five possessions out of six, you can take a two-point lead and rack it out to 14 or 15. John, you've watched enough college basketball. It is the great equalizer. At least they have that going for them. Last year with this team, when it was hyper-defensive, hyper-rebounding, you thought, oh, geez, they get down 5 or 6 points. Where are they going to get any points from? At least you have that in your back pocket where, hey, you can shoot yourself back into a game. The one thing that drives me crazy, though, and Dave and I have talked about this all week, is Indiana hasn't led or been tied, besides the Yogi Ferrell three-pointer against Purdue, in the last 10 minutes of any of these last four or five losses. That's unbelievable.
John, here's my opinion about tomorrow night, and tomorrow night only, and I suppose you could stretch some of this out. When Indiana is able to dictate with its offense, and it's done that a significant amount this year, not down the stretch so much, but a significant amount, when they do that, they win games. And they should be able to, you would think, do that against a Northwestern team that is not, you know, a huge defensive team or an unbelievable offensive team themselves.
They tried that in game one. They hit 9 threes in the first half and couldn't get more than a four-point lead.
But if you ask me right now if I think the Hoosiers are going to win tomorrow night, I've seen too much falling apart down the stretch to think they won't dictate and they will lose tomorrow.
I can't believe I'm saying this, but I'm going to say it anyway. I think one thing that's in Indiana's favor tomorrow night is it came so easy for Northwestern, especially in the second half offensively. They made some tough shots, too. It wasn't like everything was a layup. Wall made some tough shots that he usually doesn't make. He's not a three-point shooter.
Well, but there was a period of time, though, in that game, we weren't scoring any points. Anything either.
Right.
I mean, they did not run away from us in that game, even though we scored 8 points in 16 minutes.
Well, John, the other sad part is Northwestern's 15 and 16. They got to win three games in this tournament to play any postseason basketball. They've got a cherry. They don't play much postseason basketball up there in Evanston. And Chris Collins, he's not used to having the latter part of March off in his life with Duke. Everybody's got something to play for tomorrow. This isn't like the Penn State-Nebraska game where you feel like you're going to be the sacrificial lamb in the next round.
Right, but I just think that it was so easy for Northwestern the second half the first time around. They might go into that game actually thinking this is going to be easy because we've seen enough of them on Indiana. Their defense is so bad. They won't make shots. And they do, like you said, if they do start making some shots, then that turns the whole thing around because it makes everybody on that team gets pumped when one or two.
Yeah, they get better.
Northwestern had 16 points in the first 8 minutes of the second half. They had 6 points in the next 10 minutes. So at some point in time, the Hoosiers started to stop them. Now, again, I'm not going to argue it was a great defensive effort. It wasn't. But there was a point in time there where Northwestern was every bit as dry as we were.
And they still won the game.
And they still won the game because they were, you know, we weren't able to hit Jack. So, look, right now, I don't think – I have a real hard time thinking that between Saturday and Thursday, suddenly they're going to learn how to dictate on the offensive end. And that's what it comes down to for this team. Do I think they can? I mean, talent-wise and personnel-wise, I think they can. But I'm just not sold on it right now.
The only good news for this team is in their back pocket, they know they can rattle off a bunch of threes. And guess what they're going to do, John, if they're up or down? They've never stopped shooting them, have they? then they're going to keep loading them. But the pressure is squarely on their shoulders. Northwestern has – they don't have any pressure in this. They're going to get another scalp or whatever you want to call it. And Indiana, John, is facing pressure, and they haven't capitalized. They needed one win of their last three home games, and they didn't get one.
No. Well, and that goes – you talk about pride, and it's not just a matter of pride, but if you don't – the effort and you can put all the things in the same pat, and it was a whole bunch of things.
Well, the other problem is you saw it in Sunday's paper. You saw it redid in Monday. If it's taken out of context, I can't do anything about that. It's what I'm reading out of the HT. We're going to go up to the Big Ten tournament. We're going to try to win a couple of games. No mention of winning it. No mention of we're turning our season around and it's time to get going. And again, it hurts to hear the guys on the team not talk about winning stuff, and that's bothering me.
Mm-hmm. No, I think they're cooked, John. Honestly, I don't know what it started
with Purdue. Yogi said after the Purdue game they brought a fight and we didn't.
I'd argue it started with the first Purdue game rival, when I argued.
Mike, that was only your hated in-state rival.
That beat had you down 20.
Well, John, I asked the question in the first Purdue game. We went in there starting, or the second one, I should say. We're starting Hunter Perea all of a sudden again. Do we want to take ourselves out of the game that made us so good for so long in the Big Ten?
I don't understand a lot of the things that are going on.
I get they wanted to go big.
I have a feeling they're going to win tomorrow night, and don't ask me why, because no rational person would look at the game against Michigan State or Iowa and say this team could beat a CYO team right now.
The other good news about Northwestern is they gave up 86 points to Illinois. They gave up 70-something to –
and if they
beat, their doors
if,
blown
and
off.
We don't
want to
look too far,
games.
But if they beat them, they go up against Maryland, who were blew out here and nearly beat on their court.
Maryland's won seven straight.
Let's just try to get one at a time, though, guys.
You can't beat Maryland until you beat Northwestern.
Exactly.
You got to have the forest in the trees. John, good job as always. We'll get caught up with you, hopefully with more basketball down the road.
We'll do. Bye,
Thanks
guys.
For the call, John. We appreciate it. Hey, folks, there's the music. What do you think? Hoosiers win, Hoosiers lose?
I think they win tomorrow night because I think Indiana's a better team than Northwestern. It's not Northwestern's gym. The gravitas of the moment is going to arrive in buckets for Indiana. If this game goes three overtimes, you love it because Northwestern, I just don't think, can score out with Indiana.
Indiana should win this
game.
They should win,
and I think they win handily. I'm not, 81-70.
I'm not convinced. I don't think you turn it around, especially with a young team, when you're sucking wind the way
they are
right
now.
They
can turn their shooting around. They can't turn it around.
Again, it's a young team, and those teams don't just turn everything around like on a dime like people would like them to. Sure would love them to. Hey, folks, music means we've got to head on out of here. We'll be back Monday at 6 o'clock, so tune in then. You've been in the zone.